Bruce Pratt joining us on the road from Fredericton for this week's Sports Lit 101. Hello, Bruce.
Hello, Ritz. Hello, Carrie. Of course, it's 5:24 here, which I had to take into account because I've got to be somewhere at 6. But yeah, beautiful day in Fredericton, which is a beautiful city. Great night last night. About 20 of us went out to dinner at a place called the Snooty Fox, which was actually good. And I thought of Tim Bissell because I had the best Canadian-made Kolsch I've ever had.
Oh, which nice.
Really good. But yeah, we kicked it off this morning on what's going to be clearly a great festival meeting. A lot of people were at the last minute unable to get here because of Air Canada or other things, but most everybody is supposed to be here. It's here now. We started out with something near and dear to my heart. The first panel was four hockey presentations. And the first one was on a book called The Fighting Soul of Hockey in Ralph Connor's Glengarry School Days, a book I didn't know. Now, this was given by Jamie Dopp, friend of the show, been on with us a couple of times. And Glengarry School Days is one of those early sort of muscular Christianity books about hockey in Canada where the heroes don't retaliate, no matter how badly they're being beaten and bruised and grow up to be wonderful people and represent Canada and become clergymen and do everything that then gave us the Scott Young books we've talked about, like Boy on Defense, and then the books that sort of addressed that in different ways. And what became really interesting, Jamie's presentation was perfect to kick it off, because I'm only a third of the way through the third of the Beartown trilogy, but a fellow from Denmark, whose name is Pyron Karsgaard Philipsen, presented on the trilogy. And it was wonderful to have a person from one of the Nordic countries doing this, because he could speak to how true this was to Swedish, Danish, Norwegian, Finnish culture. And it's an 1,800-page series. I mean, the books are 1,800 pages when you get to the end of it. To be able to analyze it, to talk about it, to explain it without giving things away was remarkable. He did it and just an incredible job. I learned, I think, a lot about why a lot of the Scandinavian players at Maine that I've known, from Theo Andersen to Victor Osman to Michelle Weiss to Josefina Engman to Ida Kuopala to Amelie Andersen to Michelle Weiss, all Olympians on their home teams, how they do see hockey differently than North Americans. And what made that a wonderful presentation is the following presentation was by a young man I had not met before. His name is Jamie Ryan from Queen's University in Ontario. And his talk was about a critical introduction to women's hockey literature. You know, Rich, every once in a while, some young kid comes along and just makes you think, boy, where the hell was I? Why wasn't I thinking about this? Why wasn't I on top of this? It's impossible for women's hockey novels to be nostalgic because there was no women's hockey to be nostalgic about.
Right, man.
You look at so many of the hockey novels and they're all wanting to go back to the days of the original six, back to pure old hockey, old time hockey. So this young fella, Jamie Ryan, talked about the idea of hockey utopias and how the male hockey utopia and the women's hockey utopia are different. The women's hockey utopia is in the future and the men's hockey utopia is in the past. I had never really made that connection. And he talked a lot about some of the hockey literature that I don't know. I have not read, but there's a whole series of what are called hockey romance novels that are mostly about same-sex women relationships. And most of the hockey players I know who have read them said, oh, and I'm talking about women who are married to women have told me this, nah, that's all for Hollywood. That's not what it's about, which Jamie also sort of said was true. But he brought me to a different kind of understanding about why I care so much about women's sports, and that is because the future is ahead of us in women's sports. It's not really, we have Title IX, been here 50 years. We have the people that went before that, the Dust Bowl girls, the college girls who were playing lacrosse in the 1920s. But we don't have the legacy in women's sports to look back on the good old days of the WNBA. You know, as Jamie said today, that when you ask someone what the golden era of hockey was, they will describe the year in which they were 11 years old. I think that's very much true. And the fourth presentation was by Fred Mason from here. It was the host, a good buddy of mine, has been at every SLA I've been to. And it was called Demythologizing the Newfoundland Folk and Canada is Hockey. In Jamie Fitzpatrick's book, You Could Believe in Nothing. I've not read this book, but I'm going to. Apparently, the conceit of the book is that someone has decided they're going to make a documentary film about regular guys who play hockey in Newfoundland. Now, the ethnic jokes of the 1970s in America were Newfie jokes in Canada. In part because, and everybody I know who has been there will tell you that if there are friendlier people on earth than Newfoundlanders, I've never met them. I love Newfoundland. Fred is originally from Newfoundland, though he's been here in Atlantic Canada, this part of Atlantic Canada, for years. Well, they go to make the movie, and the problem is the person who wants to make the movie asks the questions, and the guys don't give him the answers they want. Sort of like if you were to ask guys playing pickup basketball at Langille Gymnasium, you know, why they continue to play basketball, they go, I like hoops. They're not going to give you some deep, you know, intellectual discussion of it's the beauty of the way the game works, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm really looking forward to read this book. You could believe in nothing. Then in the afternoon, things took a different turn. David Kilpatrick, whose work you sometimes see in the New York Times, he teaches at Mercy College, is a really, really good scholar and a very good presenter. There are poets in residence at Scottish football clubs. I was stunned to find this out. Not at the top tier clubs, but a number of lower tier clubs have experience with having a poet who spends a year in residence writing poems about their soccer team or their football team, as they would call it. And he interviewed these guys and cut pieces of the interviews out for us to see and talked about how, yes, Scottish poetry all goes back to Robbie Burns, but that's not the only reason, and made a connection between Burns. I happen to be a big Burns fan. I know Burns is not taught as much as he used to be, but he was an uneducated poet. He didn't go to college. He was a poet of the working people. And the biggest fans of these smaller Scottish football clubs, according to David and also to my friend Lee McGowan, who's here, he's a Scotsman, he's great, he's from Australia, got the great Scots accent, you know. And he said, yes, that's true. The connection between Burns and working class fans is there. And I was trying to think, what is the American sport that has the greatest appeal to working class people? And I thought they've all been co-opted. There is no working man sport, right? I mean, I was going to ask you this too, because I'm thinking you would, it used to be it was baseball. Everybody can get some kind of a baseball game, but at $175 for good seats, it's not a working man's game anymore. So that was really interesting. And then there were two more in the morning session. One was queer sports romance novels from Australia that are self-published. Now, Casey Simons and Lee McGowan are legit scholars. I mean, legit. They're also two of the funniest people I know, and they were co-presenters. And they started looking at self-published sports literature in Australia. And I don't ever look at self-published literature that much. You know, I mean, I don't have time with all the books that we get and all the things we try to cover. And they found a tremendous number of them were romance novels, what they were called queer sports romance novels. And they looked particularly at those that have to do with Australian women's, Australian rules football, which is a little, which like.
That's a niche.
yeah, it sure is. And I was telling him how, you know, I used to watch Australian rules football when it was on ESPN. I liked it.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to play it. I did. And it's only because I know Casey and for years she's been showing that it's growing sport among women, that to think that the building of the fan base includes reaching out to every single variant, if you will. And I don't mean that in any kind of pejorative way. Of the fan base, so that if you have stories about great young women who strive and become famous Australian rules football players and then have children that grow up to do that, well, you also have the people that are not going to have children and grow up to do it. It was And then a final one in the morning was on, it was called Alcoholics Anonymous and Anonymous in Arsenal, Recovery and Addiction, Recovery in Premier League, Addiction and Recovery. And it was a story of two guys who were very good players for Arsenal who were became alcoholics, and how the drinking culture is so much greater. And all the Europeans have said this in pro soccer in Europe, because they're all sponsored by alcohol teams. Hmm. And there's alcohol everywhere. I mean, we know that major leaguers have a beer after a game, but apparently, I mean, the stuff is trucked in. And that it's a real problem with some guys. That was the morning. We had some stuff in the afternoon. Our friend Duncan Jameson was there to talk about Tim Moore Rides Again, another cycling book. I got to ask him about many of the cycling books we've had on since he was last on. I got some new stuff there. And a wonderful book called Follow the Handlebars, The Man Who Loved Bicycles, was written 50 years ago. And I've forgotten the man who wrote it, Behrman, B-E-H-R-M-A-N, who is writing Hank Garfield's blog 50 years ago. Wow. Everything that Hank writes in Slower Traffic and about bicycles and cars and was in this book. It's a fascinating book. And the guy ended his life up out in Rangeley. He was originally from New York, with most of his life in Paris or New York. And at the end of his life was out in Rangeley. So we've had a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of good stuff coming up. Since we're going to be in Maine next year, a lot of these people will be around to come see us in person, maybe.
It's fantastic. Now, where are you in Fredericton?
We are at the University of New Brunswick, which is a very interesting place, because St. Thomas University, the University of New Brunswick, and New Brunswick Community College are all on the same campus. I mean, they are independent entities. If people have never been, Fredericton is a lovely town, especially down along the St. John River and downtown. If you're like me and have enough Celtic blood to not be real crazy about loyalists, it does feel a little orange around here sometimes. But it's a really, really lovely town and a very beautiful campus.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, hope you have a great time out there. We appreciate you taking a few moments to check in with us. And as you can see, Bruce, I'm wearing the T-shirt you got for me in Memphis.
I know. I like that. I like that. And I saw some more T-shirts from the Blues Hall of Fame. Some more stuff might be coming.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Hey, thank you, Bruce. Have a good time.
Thank you, Gary, Rich. See you next week.
You got it. Bruce Pratt, Sports Lit 101.